I found this fun thing online, and here's the first thing that comes up. You've been cursed by a clumsy poltergeist to slowly reverse age. And then you've been cursed by a misguided huntress to make people around you feel happy. That doesn't sound like much of a curse. It's called a random curse generator, and it's so much fun. You've been cursed by an incomprehensible lightning elemental to slowly become invisible at random. That might be fun. Anyway, I could go on forever with this, but let's drop it down a notch and talk about scary cursed objects. Dean's laughing because he thinks that's funny.
Okay, welcome to the Weird World Podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Carrie.
This is Carrie. She's going to drop it down a notch to talk about, I have no idea the context of that, but
because the random curse generator is fun and whimsical.
That's very whimsical. Yes. I do agree with that. Those are all, so what is this curse generator? Are you going to talk about that or can we talk about that now?
We can talk about it now.
Okay, what is that? I never heard of it.
It's just something I found online. It's called Random Curse Generator. I think there's more than one, and when I first found something else, it seems like it's like, is it like a Dungeons and Dragons thing? Do you curse your characters or something?
Sure, why not? I've never played it.
It seemed like it was curses for some sort of role-playing
game.
That
does make sense, yes.
But I don't think that's what this is.
So you want to curse your fellow nerd, you get this app, and then you say, I curse thee. Da, 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 okay.
Maybe.
May your dragon spit bad fire. I don't know.
Tell me if I'm wrong, but that was my interpretation of those. I didn't actually click on it and look at it. This is perchance.org /
okay. Yeah.
You are now cursed.
Yeah. These are definitely going to be, these are people who say things like huzzah and drink out of leather mugs.
Not this one. You've been cursed by a reluctant monster to humorously reverse age when you find true love.
Ooh. Okay.
I mean,
well, that's a good curse then.
Yeah.
Curses normally mean bad things. So these could be, are there positive curses? I'm confused now.
You've been cursed by a bored magic cat to be forgotten by everyone during the blood moon.
Oh.
Another one I read was, bad. You've been cursed by whatever, I don't know, to be forgotten by everyone. That's a sad one.
I would think you've been cursed to buy everything on that this website is selling you right now.
Oh, it's
give
bare
us your
bones,
credit card number.
Yeah. This website ain't selling nothing.
Well, they're missing an opportunity in this age of grifting.
Okay, so let me get back to my.
So you're going to talk to us about curses and cursed specifically, I believe, cursed objects. Okay.
You believe that specifically because that's what I said.
That's true. That's why I believe that. I knew there was a reason for that.
A curse, as you may have already gathered, is a wish for something terrible to happen to someone. Mm-hmm. It can impose disease, disaster, or death upon the victim.
Those are the most famous ones, I think.
I did not do any research beyond that into what curses actually are.
Okay.
Who is scientifically able to impose a curse? I don't know.
Magicians,
I think it depends
sorcerers,
on the object.
Like anyone who was
demony kind of stuff.
I know. I feel like a lot of people, I feel like witches at the stake cursed people a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know why they thought that would work, but they did. And it'd be scary when they cursed you as you burned them alive and they cursed your progeny and things like that. Right.
I mean,
so you're talking about, but you're not talking about curses like, King Tut, blah, blah, blah. You're talking about cursed actual specific objects that carried a curse with them.
Correct.
So the possessor, bad things happen to that possessor.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay. Is there a top 10?
I don't know.
How many do you have?
That would be too long. I think I have, I wasn't going to say.
Well.
Because I think I have 7.
Okay, then it's the top 7 most cursed objects.
But if it goes too long.
Then what?
I don't have to go through all of them. Ugh,
you're killing me. We're going to do top 7. People love lists. Come
people
on.
People named Dean love
no,
lists.
No, people on the internet and, list. Are you kidding me?
Okay, Dean.
What?
The stupid sites that you go to.
I'm not saying it's not lame. It absolutely is. Not everything has to be a list.
I know.
People love lists.
Well, anywho, the first one is in honor of you.
Thank you. What is it?
James Dean's car.
I was named after James Dean.
Correct. That's why it's in honor of you.
That was the car in which he was decapitated, I believe.
He wasn't decapitated.
He wasn't decapitated. No. Really close. He was smashed.
That was Jane Mansfield.
Oh, that's right. Okay. How about Jane Mansfield's car? I feel like that should be cursed as well.
It wasn't cursed.
Damn it. Okay. Tell us about that.
Well, on...
So, number one. No, I'm sorry. Number seven.
On September 23rd, 1955... James Dean was at a restaurant, I believe having some lunch, mm-hmm. when Sir Alec Guinness waltzed right in.
Really?
And I didn't Google Alec Guinness. Would he have been a contemporary? Is he even still alive?
Yes. No. I don't know. Maybe. I'm not sure. He was alive when he made Star Wars, that much. So he's alive during the movies he made. He was alive during that period, that much I can tell you with a lot of confidence. I don't know if he's still alive,
though. Was he one of the Dumbledores?
No, he was not a Dumbledore, Carrie.
Okay.
Good Lord. He was Obi-Wan Kenobi, the older.
I know.
The precursor to Ewan McGregor. I don't know.
Well, anyway.
But he probably would have been a rough contemporary of James Dean. This is 1955, so yes. Sure, why not?
So anyway, James Dean immediately started showing off his new Porsche 550 Spider that he had... nicknamed Little Bastard.
Little Bastard, okay. Doesn't, he got that from his giant money, I imagine.
Yeah. The story goes, Sir Alec Guinness described the car as, quote, sinister.
Oh.
He supposedly put this in his autobiography, and when I clicked on the link, it didn't work. So okay. It didn't take me to his
actual... That sounds like, by the way, some exhaustive research, Carrie. I clicked a link... It didn't work.
I was not
going
to go buy his autobiography and then read it for the reference to James Dean's car.
Okay.
That's a little over the top.
That's no one would expect that from you.
I have gotten books and read them for this podcast. Wow, Carrie,
so you have read books?
Yes. Specifically for this podcast.
You're coming off as quite the intellectual.
I'll tell you which one in the show notes. Okay. Anyway, so Alec Guinness said that he told James Dean that his car was sinister. Mm-hmm. And he also said, please never get in it. If you get in that car, you will be found dead in it by this time next week.
Really? Okay.
Sure, that's how the story goes.
Okay. But Alec Guinness said he said that in his book that you've never read.
That's how the story goes.
Okay.
I was not able to independently verify that fact. Okay. So
I can't imagine someone on the internet making stuff up.
Me neither.
Check.
Yeah.
Okay.
So 7 days later, sure enough, James Dean was found dead after crashing that little bastard of a car. Well,
there was a good reason for it. I mean, his crash was extremely predictable.
Was that the one that was called Dead Man's Curve?
It's in Paso Robles. Or it was on the way to Paso Robles from inland in California. Where you had to, I did that before it was fixed many, many times, and it's terrifying. And you can, I was almost run over by a gigantic semi truck.
Is that the only way to get to Paso Robles from SoCal?
From, you could go up the one and hug the coast, but it's a much slower drive. So if you're coming from inland, you would take the east, the Highway 41, and you'd go west toward the coast, which was a much quicker route.
And that's what we've done.
And making that right turn there was literally a blind turn. You don't see anything, maybe 50 yards when it's upon you. And trucks would go very fast through there. Big, freighter trucks, you know what I mean? And it's not a thing. And so you wouldn't see them until, so you'd make your right turn and all of a sudden this truck would be... just absolutely speeding towards you. And I had to pop, and there wasn't much room to maneuver. So yeah, he was run over by a truck.
Yeah.
Making that right turn.
In a tiny little baby car.
In a little baby Porsche, yeah.
But actually they fixed it now. It's very easy to navigate.
Yes.
But also, when I used to have to go to Paso, I did the
coast route. Because you probably had stops on the way up.
Yeah, yeah, lots of stops on the way up.
Okay, let's tell more about our past journeys. So you never did it. I did that a number of times. It was nerve-wracking for sure.
Hmm.
So yeah. So what happened is probably James Dean said, "Yeah, I'm going to go up to Paso from the inland route in a week." And Alec Guinness goes, "Oh, okay. You're going to die within 1 week." So he knew. Yeah, it was a little bit of informed guessing there.
So as you might have deduced, there's going to be a curse on this little bastard of a car.
Okay. Oh, that wasn't the curse. I thought that was the curse. James Dean did die, as a matter of fact, and he was crushed.
Well, in my view, that's what started it.
Oh, I see. I see.
Okay. But I'm making this up as I go along.
That's, you know, that's perfectly fine. I have encouraged you to do that number of times.
There's nothing in the lore that says it was cursed by anything.
Carrie, there is now.
I know, by James Dean.
No, by you, just now.
Or maybe by Alex.
You've started the lore.
Anyway, a surgeon / recreational race car driver.
That's a very common dual role.
Dr. William F. Eschrich rescued some of the parts of the wreckage of this little Porsche from a junkyard.
Okay.
And I guess he kept some for his own personal little race cars.
It's a little ghoulish, but...
And he gave some parts to his friend, Dr. Troy McHenry, and they both installed these parts in their own cars.
I think I see where this is going.
And then during a race in October 1956, they both crashed.
Oh, my.
Eschrich, the doctor who salvaged these parts, survived, but his Dr. Powell, McHenry, did not. So this is actually when people started to talk about cars.
So people knew about that there was some of James Dean's spider on their cars. They died.
Yes.
Must be cursed. So that's the classic post-hoc curse, not the pre-hoc curse, not a real word. But
well, yeah.
So, okay.
If Alec Guinness is to be believed, it was a pre-hoc curse, right?
Again, something you cannot confirm nor deny.
So the rest of the little bastard car went to a man named George Barris. He is like a car customizer for movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. So he's the one that made the 1949 Mercury that James Dean drove in Rebel Without a Cause, which came out the year he died.
Mm-hmm. And he did three movies all very recently. In fact, one did not come out until after his death, right? His three big movies, East of Eden, Giant, and Rebel Without a Cause, were the three movies we know him from. They're all three big movies. They all came out very, you know, in the very tail end of his career / life. One of them came out right after. People don't realize, he was such a big star. He's so well known now.
Yeah.
He had three movies, and he was in his early mid-20s. Well, how old was he again?
I don't know. He wasn't 27.
He was very young. So it's amazing.
Yeah, I don't know how old he was. I'm not a huge...
You're a James Dean aficionado?
No, I'm not a fan. I mean, I don't... Wow. I've never seen a single movie of his, but the snippets that you see, you know, in your lifetime just because he's James Dean,
sure.
I don't get it.
Hmm. But, well, okay. I guess my mom begs to differ.
I did buy you the t-shirt.
Yes, you did.
And it's a cool t-shirt.
It is.
So anyway, so this guy, George Barris, he made the Rebel Without a Cause car, and he also made Adam West's Batmobile and the Munster car that apparently was called the Munster Coach with a K, and probably a bunch of other Hollywood vehicles.
Mm-hmm. Did he make the Beverly Hillbillies jalopy? That was probably the best.
I'll bet he did. It didn't say in my notes.
Did he make the little sports car that Get Smart drove? No? I'm doing a lot of 60s and 70s references here.
I don't know.
Okay.
So supposedly, over the years...
Did he make the Dukes of Hazzard pro-Confederate, pro-slavery car?
I don't know.
From the Dukes of Hazzard?
I already told you the cars that I know about. Oh,
man. Did he make Cat?
Supposedly, the parts of the spider caused some more little incidents. A garage inexplicably caught fire when it was inside. Two tires blew out at the same time while they were on another car, obviously.
A car with parts, not the tires from the crash, because those presumably would have been destroyed, right?
The way I read it, it's the tires from the car.
The tires? They reused the tires from a horrific fatal crash.
Yeah.
That seems unusual.
And two thieves were trying to steal some parts from this car, and they were injured. Not killed, but injured.
Did you say killed?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Apparently, George Barris really hyped up these stories.
Oh, okay.
So,
yeah.
You know, a lot of people thought, oh, this is just a publicity stunt. And then Barris claimed that the car just mysteriously vanished in 1960.
Okay.
It was actually donated to the safety exhibit with the California Highway Patrol.
You know what? I think I've seen that picture.
Yeah.
Because it's crushed.
Like this is what happens.
Yeah, like this is what happens. When don't mess around. Don't do stupid things on the highways. This is what happens. Yeah. It's absolutely, it's like no one could survive that. Indeed, no one did.
Remember the anti-drunk driving campaign where they would bring a car? Or maybe later, for us, it was probably drunk driving.
In the 80s.
For kids now, it's probably texting and driving.
Probably, yeah.
Because they would bring, I think they brought one of those cars to our kids' school. I'm against it. I don't like it.
It's a scare tactic. It's but, morbid. You know, bad things happen to cars. I've seen the results of a truck on car. And it's like, it's cute.
We all have.
I mean, it is unsurvivable.
So this is when with the California Highway Patrol, their first exhibit caught fire.
Really?
And then in the second exhibit they did, the car fell on a student.
This is the spider or remnants of the spider?
Yes.
Wow.
Breaking the
student's which they apparently hip. Gathered back from all these people who had it in various guys. Okay, that doesn't super track.
But I think is the body, right?
Yeah, but okay.
So they pilfered tires and, you know, parts of whatever.
Small parts.
The to put engine on and, yeah, I don't know.
Does it make a huge amount of sense?
Well, because you can't reuse the body.
No, but so nobody the engine, that. Again, this was crushed by a semi truck.
I know.
Truck,
so it's I don't a bad know if idea.
The engine was, I don't know. I don't want to be skeptical.
You don't?
No, but I doubt there is many parts of that car that were used for anything else.
Ever. Well, the kid broke his hip. I'm assuming it was a boy. Could have been a girl.
Yeah.
And
probably a boy.
It even crushed and killed a truck driver who was transporting it. How? Maybe it fell off the
He was unloaded and just stood right beneath it and somebody lost their grip. Or yep. Okay. Sure. Makes sense. Okay, guys, you got the left. I'll get the, oh, shit.
Well, apparently, Dr. Eschrich saved the transaxle, whatever that is.
That's the axle, but it's beyond something, so it's called the transaxle.
Sure, and he kept it, and guess who bought that? Somebody you're very familiar with bought it
what in year?
May 2021 for a total of $382,000.
Okay, Elon Musk.
No.
Damn it.
Somebody not that well known, but you this person is well known to you. And he's going to show it in a museum that he runs in Las Vegas. About haunted things.
Is it Penn and Teller? Is it
No, you don't guys? Like this person.
Oh, I don't like this person. A museum about haunted. Oh, is that dick fuck from the Basic Cable show that pretends that things are haunted when they're not?
Zach Baggins.
Okay, Zach Baggins, right, whose skill set involves. What was that? And that's all his skill set involves. Okay.
I knew you like that guy. So if anybody wants to go see it, this transaxle.
He paid how much money for that?
$382,000.
Disgusting. He has $382,000 to pay for it.
I know.
It's just a condemnation.
Well, he has the public. History Channel money or whatever. Like I said,
disgusting. He has any money at all to spend on anything.
Number two is my favorite, and I will post a picture of it.
Number six, Carrie.
Oh, number six.
List go backwards. Six.
It's called Robert the Doll.
Robert the Doll.
Have you ever seen this doll?
I don't think so.
Well, Robert predates Annabelle, probably the most famous haunted doll.
Are you going to talk about Annabelle?
No, because I hate that.
She's pretty cursed.
It's not true.
It's all true. Those are documentaries.
No.
Okay.
That's why I'm...
Damn it.
I'm not... I boycott they were. Annabelle.
Okay.
I boycott obvious fake movie ploys for things. Anyway, this is Robert the Doll.
Okay.
He's a 40-inch tall doll. Made by a toy company, a German toy company called, I think it's Steiff, Steiff. They're world renowned. They make little bears and stuff. Oh. If you get a Steiff
bear?
Yeah, Steiff stuffed animal. They're not cheap. Mm-mm. And, you know.
Are you going to start collecting them?
They're nice things to have. No.
Okay.
You
like mice.
You don't know me at all.
You like bears?
I hate stuffed animals.
You like mice? You like little baby mice that are stuffed from, where are they from again? Sweden? Norway? Malik. Germany. They're called okay. Malik Malik. Okay.
They're not
are they German.
They're not German.
They must be German. They're Malik.
They're like Danish or something.
Okay.
And they're Germany adorable. Life. Malik, sponsor us.
Okay.
I'll do a glowing ad for you.
You just did.
Yeah. Anyhow, German toy company called Steiff.
Okay.
And, okay, so.
Or Steve.
1904 mm-hmm. is when
oh.
Robert the doll was given to a little four-year-old kid named Robert Eugene Otto, oh, which is probably why he was named Robert. Mm. Robert lived in Key West, Florida, I think, to a very affluent family.
Okay.
Robert, for some reason, went by Gene, short for Eugene, his okay. middle name, instead of Robert sense. Or Robert Bobby.
Eugene. Okay.
Some people say Robert the doll was a gift for Gene from his grandfather.
Just a lot of there's various legends about this person we've
well,
never heard
the
of.
Other legend is that it was a gift by a maid, but I okay. don't I'm gonna go with the grandfather. This doll was dressed in a sailor suit that some sources say it was actually Robert's sailor suit. Some sources say they just made it to look like a sailor suit mm-hmm. that all little boys probably all
40
little
inches.
Rich boys wore in
that's like
the turn of the century.
How big is that? It's almost 3.5 feet. 40 That's inches. A pretty big doll.
It is a big doll.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A little bit scary. For how old was Robert? 4 years old?
4.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
It's bigger than him, wasn't it? Wouldn't it be? 4 year old? I'm not sure.
I don't remember. Think
it's been
so.
A long time.
I don't know. Anyway, legend says Robert the doll became Lil Jean's evil alter ego.
Ooh.
Whenever Robert's or Gene's parents would come up and find his room all
oh,
a messy mess and his toys are broken, he
it.
Would either say, Robert did it mm-hmm. or Robert told me to do
He's
it.
He's a little sociopath. Was it, when did he start killing birds and other animals he caught?
Well, Gene grew up, became an artist.
Hmm. Slash serial killer.
He got married in 1930 and then he came back to his childhood home. You know, he went off to college and stuff.
Got it.
Got his art degree.
Figured.
Married a woman named Anne, short for Annette.
Not Annabelle? Damn it.
No. Came back to his childhood home to live there, and he called it the artist house.
Oh.
Gene's wife,
it Anne. It was just a normal house, but he was pretentious.
Well, Gene's wife, Anne, not a fan. Of Robert the doll. I think she found him a little bit creepy.
You think? He's a 3.5 foot doll that he owned decades earlier when he was a small child, and he blamed terrible acts of vandalism and murder on this doll.
Well,
I threw in the last part about murder, but I'm assuming.
So Gene created a little space for Robert the doll up in the attic.
Mm.
So that's where he resided. And people who would walk by the house claimed that they could see Robert the doll in the window and that
please
it would
tell me
it would change positions.
I love that. And would his like his neck move as he followed you, as he stared at you, as you crossed around the street?
Yep, oh my God. It would phenomenal. Watch them from the window.
I love it.
As they walked by.
Yes.
People who actually, for some reason or another, would actually go in the house said they could hear footsteps and laughter coming from the attic.
But like maniacal laughter, right? Evil, they, sinister giggling sound. That was not
I
any
mean,
of...
That's a given.
Okay.
Gene died in 1974. Hmm. So supposedly...
Was Robert the doll a pallbearer at his funeral?
No, Robert the doll got left in the attic.
Oh, no.
Because remember, Anne didn't care for
mm-hmm.
that doll. No. So she just left him there. She probably forgot about him.
She, for sure.
And she sold the house, you know, she sold everything. And a woman named Myrtle Reuter, Reuter? I don't know. It's spelled like Reuters News Agency. Okay. So I'm going with Reuter.
Let's do that.
She's probably from the news agency.
An heiress.
Yes. So she ended up with the house and she basically put up with Robert the doll laughing and giggling and pitter-patter of his footsteps in the attic.
And scaring little kids who walk down the street.
For 20 years.
Oh, my.
And then, I guess she finally decided, I'm sick of that doll. So she gave him to the Fort East Martello Museum, where Robert the doll is still today. And
so it must have been some notoriety at the time. Otherwise, museums can go, wait, why are you giving us your trash? We don't want this doll.
I guess I dropped the ball. I should have Googled Fort East Martello Museum.
It's okay. You try to follow a link. The link was broken. That was the best you could do.
I did follow a link to a firsthand story of somebody who went to the museum and saw the doll.
Okay.
Because apparently, if you visit the museum and you don't follow the directions they give you about how to treat Robert the doll, you're going to end up
cursed
with the curse.
Of Robert the doll?
I'll tell you. Before you walk into the museum, you have to greet and introduce yourself to Robert. I don't know how you can do that before you walk into the museum. Oh, no. Before you get into the museum, the tour guide gives you these instructions.
Okay. You know what? Why don't you start over? We can cut that out because you sound insane. You know what? Let's just continue and leave you sounding insane. Go
ahead. So you have to greet Robert and introduce yourself to him.
Okay.
If you want to take a photo, you have to ask first. I don't know how.
Do you ask him?
Yeah.
How do you know there's been
consent? That's what I was just going to say. I don't know how he's going to tell you yes or no.
If he nods, phenomenal.
And if
he nodded no, I would for sure not take a picture.
Before you leave the museum, you need to go back and say goodbye to Robert the doll.
That just seems like common courtesy.
If you don't follow these rules, you will have bad luck. Bad things will happen to you.
Okay.
So, because once he was put on exhibit at this museum, cameras and electronic devices would malfunction if he was in the room. And then pretty soon, the museum started getting a whole bunch of letters from people who had visited the museum. They were apologizing to Robert for their disrespectful behavior and asking for his forgiveness.
Is it like those people who send back pieces of Hawaii
exactly
to the island saying, I'm sorry,
yep,
I stole this from a reef, I got back, and I broke my foot. Please take this back and apologize to King Kamehameha.
Yep.
Okay.
It's Pele. Is who they have to.
Thank you.
So, and then in these letters, they would, you know, people would say what bad luck had befallen them.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. One person got burned by hot water. Oh. A lot of people missed flights.
For sure, those things would not have happened without.
Or got divorced.
Oh, wow.
The person
who's dead? We got to have at least one death.
Well, no, I didn't read about
it. Make it up now.
But the person whose account that I read, I think they missed their first flight home, and then their next flight got severely delayed, and then
would have left the airport and brought it back to the museum before even.
Well, they eventually made it home, and their luggage didn't make it home, and they called the airport, and the airport or the airline had no idea where their luggage was, and it's like, okay, I guess we're never getting it back.
And when they finally found their luggage, there were tiny little handprints on it. Handprints from perhaps a child of, let's say, 3 feet, 4 inches.
Well.
Or something like that. I don't know.
The woman and her husband both wrote, it looked like emails, of apology to Robert the doll. And then the next day, guess what happened?
They got their luggage.
They got a phone call that they found their luggage. It had gone with a different airline or something.
Nice. And they just washed off those handprints, those little tiny handprints. That's not a problem. Thank you, Robert.
Well, he was the inspiration for some movies.
And the handprints were on the inside. Sorry. Just trying to make it creepier.
A movie called Robert.
There was a movie called Robert about Robert the doll.
It was released in 2015.
And it starred Ben Affleck.
I have seen.
Did not star Ben Affleck.
No. Okay. I have seen a movie that sounds like it's about a doll, like a cursed doll.
Okay. That could have been Annabelle.
No, it was a boy doll. And I mean, I could picture it in my head. Couldn't for the life of me tell you who was in it or what the name was.
There was a movie called Magic with Cliff Robertson where his ventriloquist doll became
way
evil
after
or something
that.
Like that. Okay. Damn it. I'm all out of evil doll movies. Those are the only ones I know.
But the tagline.
Oh, there was Krusty the Clown in the episode of The Simpsons. All you had to do was turn it from evil to good, though. So it turned out it was simple.
The tagline is, he wants to be your best friend, forever.
But does he? Oh, forever. That actually is an encouraging thing. Like, you're going to live a long time. So I'm not sure how creepy that is. It's supposed to be creepy. It failed.
Yeah, I don't know.
So that's Robert the Doll, number six.
Mm-hmm.
Number five.
The Dybbuk box.
Dybbuk box. That's the one so far I've heard of. Well, I've heard of the car thing, but okay. I have heard of that.
Okay. So according to Jewish folklore, a Dybbuk, D-Y-B-B-U-K, or also D-I-B-B-U-K, is an evil spirit. It's a disembodied human spirit that, because of their sins during their lifetime, wander restlessly until they find a body of a living person that they can inhabit.
Ooh, that sounds like possession.
Yeah. This belief in these Dybbuks was prevalent in the 16th and 17th centuries in Eastern Europe.
Are they like demons? Is it Dybbuk? Just anybody's soul can do this? Anybody?
Yeah.
A wandering soul.
Because of their sins.
Because of their sins.
So they have sinned, but sinners are not evil, Dean.
No, well, maybe.
Well, supposedly, a Holocaust survivor accidentally summoned a Dybbuk while using a homemade Ouija board.
Did he not watch The Exorcist? Was it before The Exorcist? What year is this?
I don't know. Let's say immediately after the Holocaust.
Okay. Let's just say that. You have no idea. But okay.
I have no idea.
Pre-Exorcist. Okay.
They managed to trap it inside a wine cabinet. So the Dybbuk box is a wine cabinet. It's little. I don't know what kind of wine could hold.
The Dybbuk box part is only from post-World War II?
Supposedly. So my story goes.
I thought it was, the box part of it was much more ancient than that.
Well, I don't know.
I've literally heard of it. I know almost nothing about it.
The Dybbuk got trapped in the wine box.
So the Dybbuk is the soul, the center.
Around
the soul's
that
center.
Time.
Okay.
But I don't know how old this wine box was.
I meant the idea of souls can be in boxes kind of a thing. Like sinners' souls in boxes. I thought that went way back.
It probably does.
Okay.
This particular one that I'm talking about, this is the origin story of it.
Okay, you made it sound like this is the origin story of all Dybbuk boxes.
I don't think so.
Okay.
Anyhow.
Again, it sounds like some rock solid. it might have been a broken link, so in fairness to you.
I'm just talking about this one particular Dybbuk box
Carrie's getting exasperated.
That showed up on eBay and somebody bought it in current times.
I think I have heard about this.
So this box... In 2003, it was acquired by an antique store owner named Kevin Manis. Mm-hmm. He either bought it from a 103-year-old Holocaust survivor on eBay or an estate sale.
Or he made it up.
I've read it both ways. So
there's a third choice there. But.
Well, one story says he gave it to his mother on the very same day she had a stroke.
Ooh.
But... And then I guess he took it back, but he had a bunch of unexplained things happen to him. He had recurring nightmares, unexplained bruises. He would smell ammonia. And so he needed to get rid of this box. Huh. So he put it back on eBay.
Oh.
Or maybe this is the first time it ended up on eBay.
Yeah.
If he got it at an estate sale.
Yeah.
And a man named Jason Haxton bought it.
Mm-hmm.
He also experienced weird things after buying the Dybbuk box. According to Jason Haxton, he said, quote, "The day it arrived, I put my hands on it, and it almost feels like the thing collapses into a liquid state." No idea what that means.
Mm-hmm.
"I felt like a knife was coming into my gut. I was paralyzed in pain. When I go to bed, I have terrible dreams of a hag that seems to come with the box."
Ew.
So that must be the Dybbuk.
Yeah. I think the Dybbuk is the soul. The
correct.
Possessing. Okay.
That's the hag.
Oh, I see.
That he dreams, that he has nightmares about. Okay. I'm assuming.
Yeah. Makes sense.
He said that he first heard about it from a colleague whose roommate had listed it for sale after a series of terrifying events. So that friend or the roommate of his friend or of his colleague must be Kevin Manis.
Okay.
So, and I guess he was just intrigued and decided he had to buy it. So, apparently, it did come from the sale of the Oregon estate sale of this Holocaust survivor.
Okay.
And, but he, so this is Kevin Manis. Mm-hmm. He was told that the box was always to remain shut and put in a place that was out of reach and never, ever to be opened. He probably opened it, and that's why his mom had a stroke.
He shouldn't have opened it.
Jason Haxton paid $280 for the box, and he opened it.
Oh, Jason.
Inside, it contained a goblet, two locks of hair tied with string, which is a little bit scary.
A little creepy.
Pennies from the 1920s, a dried rosebud, a cast iron candlestick holder, and a granite statue engraved with Hebrew letters.
Do we know how big this is? The wine cabinet? That's a lot of stuff in there.
I mean, this is my impression.
Okay. Just for the listeners, Carrie is making size with her hands.
No, I'm going to say my theory is it could hold four wine bottles.
Okay.
Ish.
Okay.
No idea.
I love that. Just throw it out there. Say it with authority.
Jason Haxton said he didn't believe in any of the stories about it being cursed or anything. And he wasn't worried when he opened it. He just opened it right up and found those things.
But
he became very ill and experienced what he called a tidal wave of bad luck. And then he said all of his issues went away when he consulted with a rabbi who told him to put everything back in the cabinet and put the entire cabinet in a gold-lined wooden container.
Damn.
To negate.
And I just happened to sell one right here. I don't know if you, Jason.
I guess it would have to be, I mean, real gold?
Yeah,
quite pricey. It's
not cheap. More than $280. He shouldn't have opened it, to be honest.
Well, that would negate the Dybbuk
gold
that was inside.
Okay.
And he has the cabinet in a military-grade case, whatever that means, which he buried, I believe, somewhere in Missouri.
This should have happened a long time ago.
And he was confident nobody would ever be able to find that box, you know, like accidentally unearth it and then open it and reenact that curse.
Sure.
Not reenact, reignite
it's the fine. Curse. It's fine, either way.
And he says, thousands of people have offered to buy the box for a lot of money.
Yeah.
But he says it would be unethical for him to sell it. He said, like I said, he's not worried about it. Even if it does resurface, he believes that the Dybbuk, the actual
soul,
he believes their unfinished business has been finished.
Okay. And that unfinished business consisted of giving him terrible luck.
I guess so.
Okay. It follows.
So, and he this actually ancient thinks,
Jewish soul wanted to give someone in the modern world bad luck.
He thinks that the box's energy has actually been reversed. So instead of cursing people and doing bad things, he says it's his personal fountain of youth. And he says his vitals are better now than when he was 40.
Oh my God.
And he thinks that's because of the Dybbuk box.
Do you know how the story ends?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, today, the market, probably mostly on eBay, is full of Dybbuk boxes.
I would think,
If you want to buy one, you can buy one.
And this only dates 20 years ago. I didn't know it was that recent. Okay.
And you can get one for as low as $20 or as much as like $1,000.
It has to have some Missouri soil on it. Like sort of just in the seams.
No, these are just Dybbuk boxes. They're not purporting
to be also known as wine cabinets.
Yeah, they're not purporting to be his Dybbuk box.
Okay.
But he says, oh, those are all fakes. No, they aren't real. They're just made to look like a Dybbuk box. He says there are only a few actual real Dybbuk boxes in the world. I don't know how he has become such an authority.
I don't know, but he has to sell it to Elon Musk for $300,000 at least, or Bilbo Baggins or whatever for $400,000.
And authentic Dybbuk boxes will come with some sort of a backstory and like an actual document, certified document.
Like a Beanie Baby.
Such as papers signed by a rabbi that will state, do not ever open this box. And I said it was buried in Missouri, and mm-hmm. he was confident. Well, he did actually unbury it at some point. To do what, Dean? Do you know?
To come clean.
No. Okay, so that it could appear on the television show.
Oh, God.
Ghost Adventures.
Oh, my sweet.
Isn't that Zach Baggins?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Oh, I thought it was.
There's 17 of those kinds of shows. I can't keep track of.
Well, it was on Ghost Adventures.
Equally sleazy. is that the end of your story?
Yes.
Because there's more to it.
What?
Did you know? No, not in 2021, he came clean and said he made it all up. It's a complete work of fiction.
Oh, man. Jason D. Quote, just ruined it for me.
I am a creative writer. The Dibbit Box is a story that I created, and the Dibbit Box story has done exactly what I intended it to do when I posted it 20 years ago, which is to become an interactive horror story in real time. End quote. He added new elements to Dibbit Box story over the years to help evolve it, keep it relevant and interesting. He made it up.
So he's right when he says they're all fake.
Yes, he is right, including
he knows
his.
He
made it up. I applaud him for coming clean. It only took him 20-something years.
Wait, he made up the origin, the whole Dybbuk thing?
Everything.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
It's all fake. It's a complete work of fiction.
I'm going to consult a rabbi, see how they feel about that.
You probably should. That's a good idea. Number four.
The Crying Boy Paintings.
Crying Boy Paintings.
Do you know about
not
this
heard
one?
Of them, no.
This is in England, actually. Started in the 80s. In fact, on September 4th, 1985, a British tabloid by the name of The Sun, you may have heard of it.
I have heard of it.
Printed a portrait of a weeping toddler boy on the, I'm assuming on page one, because big story. Mm-hmm. And the headline was, Blazing Curse of the Crying Boy.
Okay.
And told of the news story.
And that was pre-AI. Before they started putting pictures of a little girl in a canoe with her dog that are completely fake after Hurricane Helene.
Well, this is an actual picture of a portrait, you know, a painting.
Oh, a painting.
It's okay. A painting.
Okay.
Called The Crying Boy.
Okay.
And the story goes, a South Yorkshire couple, they had this painting of the crying boy in their home, and it burned down.
That's
their house burned down.
Okay. But not the painting.
After a chip pan caught fire.
Okay.
French
fry. A french fry pan. I didn't know they had specialized french fry pans. That's weird.
Otherwise known as a frying pan.
A frying pan, yeah. Okay.
But anyway, the crying boy portrait that they had hanging in their house was the only thing that was not burned up.
Yeah.
The husband's brother was a firefighter. And he said that he and his fellow firefighters kept finding other prints of this actual, so I don't know if it was a painting or a print that they had in their home, but they kept seeing this print hanging in homes where there was a house fire, but that picture was just fine.
So wherever this was, obviously reproductions survived house fires routinely.
Correct.
Okay.
So this article became huge, and people went cuckoo for it, and started reporting, you know, similar fires where they had this painting. Some were new, some were old, and it had happened years ago, and they got reports of dozens of these fires. So, of course, this is The Sun. They have to speculate on how this curse started, because, you know, the theory is it's the crying boy in the painting is starting these house fires for whatever reason. So there's a folklore expert by the name of Ron Vickery who thought that maybe the artist had abused the little boy who was the model for his crying boy.
That ties in with surviving fires. And you can see the direct connection between those two things.
No, that the actual boy is now dead and he's getting his revenge.
By surviving. In the form of paintings.
No, he's getting his revenge by causing fires.
Oh, he's causing the fires.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You didn't make that connection for me, and I am unable to make that connection right now. You might think it was obvious. Everyone listening might think it was obvious, but it wasn't to me. So the little boy in this painting is causing, if you put a painting up on your wall, your house is going to burn down, and that painting is going to survive.
Yeah, okay. I think.
We do not have any.
Is you're she looking. Crying?
No.
We have some sad looking little girls.
She's not crying. She's just sort of pensive.
I actually know who that is supposed to be.
Yeah. Okay. I think I do too. All right. Well, thank you.
Anyway, you want to know who the artist is?
Yeah.
It's, they're all prints of the same kid. Uh-huh. They contain a signature of Giovanni Bragolin.
Mm.
And, you know, people couldn't find information about this. It sounds like an Italian.
Sure does.
Artist. And so there were lots of rumors. And apparently he painted hundreds of crying children. Many of them were probably street urchins.
Okay.
In either Italy or Spain. And finally, in 2000, a book of creepy stories called Haunted Liverpool came out and said that in 1995, a well-respected school teacher named Greg Mallory found out that the painter was a man named Francho Seville. Don't know. This is probably a mashup of stories from the Sun reporting and this George Mallory guy.
Mm-hmm.
But they claimed that one of the urchins was a boy named Don Bonillo who accidentally started a fire killing his parents.
That's why he was crying.
And this is in Spain. Oh, yes. And that would be sad.
He felt really bad about
So from then on, wherever he went, a fire happened.
Oh, so he was a little fire starter?
Yeah.
Was this before or after the Stephen King book?
So they gave him the nickname Diablo.
Oh, that's cruel. He's just a child. Don't call a child Diablo.
Apparently,
name is Diablo.
He was adopted against the will of a priest who probably ended up in a church orphanage kind of thing. And
the priest wanted to keep him in the orphanage, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, supposedly he was adopted by the painter and he was abused by that painter.
Oh. This poor kid.
And in the 1970s, little Don Bonillo was killed in a fire. Yeah, in an explosion caused by a car accident.
If any of that was true, I would feel just awful.
Well, the 14 times, isn't that weird? Isn't that a weird?
14?
14.
Oh, 14 times. Oh, yeah. 14, yes.
Yeah, you know about that.
Oh, yeah. That goes away. But Charles Fort, he was a collector of strange things raining frogs and things like that.
Well, somebody who writes for the 14 times, David Clark, has said that this legend has quite a few holes in it.
You think?
Giovanni Bragolin and Seville are some of the few pseudonyms for a Spanish painter named Bruno Amadio, and he couldn't find any evidence that teacher, George Mallory, or the little boy, Don Bonillo, ever actually existed, but Bruno Amadio did, and he likely was the actual painter of these crying boys, like 20 to 30 different paintings, and he trained, I guess, in painting in Venice sometime after World War II. And these prints were extremely common in, at least in England. I don't know if they were all over Europe.
Kind of like the dogs playing poker. Just everyone. Yeah. Elvis, Velvet Elvis.
They were sold in department stores through the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
There was also another artist named Anna Zinkeisen. And she had a very similar series of crying children in her paintings that people also thought were cursed also. Why would you want pictures of sad children?
I don't know. Why would you paint them? Why would you buy them? Yeah. That's weird.
So, and...
Happy children. Is there?
I think that one guy, what was his name?
Mallory?
David Clark.
Oh.
He said, you know, the geographical cluster of fires in England was just a function of the popularity of these prints among working class communities.
In South Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. Was David Clark the firefighter?
No, he was the 14 times guy.
Oh, got it. Okay, yeah. That makes sense.
But, you know, the people who lived in the north of England
didn't
care about all those, you know,
no.
reasonable explanations of what was going on. So the Sun newspaper called for people to send them their children crying paintings and they would take care of them to save all these people from their house going up
and thousands poured into the offices of the
Did over like a 6 week period. They got tons of paintings, but some like a fire department official said that it wasn't, there was no sinister reason why the paintings weren't being burned in the fires, because they were actually printed on a kind of hardboard that was pretty fire resistant, and they might have actually been treated, the actual painting might have been treated with some kind of, you know, flame resistant
something, as you will,
which seems weird to me, but they just didn't burn easily, and it wasn't supernatural.
Plus, undoubtedly, massive exaggeration of these, you know, firefighters reporting. Oh, I've seen 10, you know.
Yes. No, well, one firefighter's wife said that she thinks it's the tears that put the fire out on the painting.
Fire in the voice of reason.
So, and when the newspaper called for people to send them their paintings, over a 6 week period, they got 2,500 paintings. So they put them in a big pile, and they had a big old bonfire.
And they burned? Mm-hmm. Oh, well, that's, I mean, that kind of defeats the purpose.
And they had a firefighter come, because you have to still be safe.
Makes sense.
And so this firefighter who was overseeing the burning of the crying boy painting said, "We all listened for muffled cries, but all we heard was the crackle of paintings burning."
If you said the cackle of a little boy, that would have been a way better ending. Well, that's interesting. Okay. This is from The Sun, not known for its accurate reporting.
Correct.
It is a rag, I believe is the technical term.
Okay, let's go.
Number three.
Shorties. This okay. This is going to be short.
Kara's going to wrap it up with three short ones. Go.
You ever heard of Thomas Busby's chair?
No, I've not. I've never heard of even Thomas Busby, let alone a chair.
Well, apparently cursed objects are pretty common in North Yorkshire of England, because that's another where one we are again.
Well, you're in South Yorkshire. Let's just say Yorkshire in general is a very well-known.
Why am I in South Yorkshire?
The previous story was South Yorkshire.
Oh, this I thought it was North Yorkshire. Oh, isn't Yorkshire in the north?
It's in the north, yes.
Okay. Well, this is North Yorkshire.
Okay.
A place called the Thirsk Museum.
The Thirst Museum?
Thirsk with a K.
Oh, I was going to, like, people who are like a glass of water solves the whole problem of the museum.
If you go to the Thirsk Museum, you will see a handsome oak chair.
Oh.
It's either attached to a wall high up off the floor or hanging from the ceiling, one or the other. Okay. I've seen it written both ways. Oh. And the name of this chair is Thomas Busby's Chair of Death.
Mm.
Here's the story.
That's foreboding. Okay.
1702, Thomas Busby murdered his partner in crime. Uh-huh. Literal, they were criminals together. Okay. His name was Daniel Otte. And they had an altercation that had something to do with Thomas Busby's wife.
No.
Who actually was Daniel Otte's daughter.
Okay.
So he murdered his father-in-law.
Okay.
Who was his criminal partner.
Okay.
Other people said, and so we don't know what this fight was over. Some people said, no, this fight was really because Daniel Otte sat down in Thomas Busby's favorite chair at a local pub. And you don't sit in Busby's chair.
No.
So obviously Thomas Busby was caught by the authorities. And what happens when you murder somebody in England in the 1700s?
You hang, baby. Inexpertly, too. You probably die after 15 minutes of horrific pain.
Well, he was being marched to the gallows, and they gave him, you know, the people that were marching him to the gallows gave him one last detour to the pub.
That's which very kind.
That's what you do, I guess.
Sure. And did he get to sit in that chair one more time?
I don't know if he sat in the chair, but he did say, "May sudden death come to anyone who dares sit in my chair."
Maybe they shouldn't have let him go to the pub.
That's a curse.
Yeah.
And then he gets beheaded.
Oh, he got beheaded in 1702?
No, I guess gallows would be hanged.
That's hanging, yes.
maybe his head fell off and they hung him.
Yeah, nice rescue.
So then, guess what happened?
What?
Sudden death came to anyone who sat in his chair.
Well, yeah.
A chimney sweep was found hanged after sitting in the chair in 1894. So it took a long time.
That is a long time. That's almost two centuries.
You know, stuff probably happened, but they didn't record it.
You know what I'd do? I would curse this gallows and say, the next person who gets hanged on this gallows is going to die. And
yeah.
I'd be right.
Well, and then some World War II pilots who took turns sitting in the chair, probably because they heard about Thomas Busby's curse.
That was just tempting fate at this point.
They died in battle.
Yeah, not a lot of pilots died in World War II. No. That was uncommon.
A delivery man died in a car crash right after trying out the chair in the 1970s, and on and on. So finally, in 1978, the pub's landlord gave it to the Thirsk Museum with strict instructions.
Don't let anybody sit in it?
You have to suspend it up above the floor.
Oh, so nobody could sit in it. Yeah.
According to the museum people, they ignored that at first. And people would specifically go to the chair in order to
sit in it.
Purpose.
It's kind of a dick move at a museum, regardless of the reputation of the piece.
Well, it was because they wanted to die. So they were doing it on purpose. Ooh, God. It became that kind of thing.
Yikes. That's dark. That just took a dark turn, Carrie.
Well, some people say, the museum curator, Cooper Harding, says that Busby was actually executed for murdering Daniel Auty, but their fight was over their gold counterfeiting scheme. Mm-hmm. There is no record of Thomas Busby's marriage to Daniel's daughter, but that doesn't mean anything. It was 1704.
Yeah.
There might not have been any records. And there's a historian who is a furniture historian, so he knows his stuff about furniture.
As long as it's furniture related, yeah.
His name's Adam Bowett. He's looked at the chair, and he claims that it's partially machine turned.
Oh, well, that's not good.
So, yeah.
No. So it isn't going to go back to 1894, does it? Would it?
Well, it's probably sometime after 1840.
Oh, okay.
So.
Wow. Okay. So not 17.
So if Busby actually did curse a chair.
That explains the long hiatus events,
it's a different chair.
Yeah.
But.
I choose to believe it.
The museum curator says he still wouldn't take his chances and sit in that chair of death.
I'm not sitting in it.
Said he's not superstitious, but he wouldn't sit in it.
Nope.
Because if he did and was knocked down by a car, everyone would say it was because of the chair. Yeah.
And, you're dead, but you're still embarrassed. So.
Yep.
Number two.
Two? Okay.
Yeah, two. Drum roll, please.
Maybe I counted wrong.
Yeah, this is your last one?
No, I've got three more, but I'm going to go with two. Called, this is shorty, the Bassano vase.
Bassano?
B-A-S-A-N-O.
Okay.
So, it's somebody
death
was...
to flowers.
Diggering.
No, diggering is a good word.
Diggering around their yard, and they discovered a 15th century silver Italian vase.
As you will. If you're diggering around your yard.
Must have been beautiful.
Yeah.
Inside the vase was a note that said, beware, this vase brings death.
Are you going to tell us where this yard was?
Nope, because I don't know. I told you this is super short.
Oh,
this
okay.
one's very short.
Got it.
Well, if you did this, what would you do with it?
I put it on eBay. Take it to people. I don't know. I'd show it to you first.
Yeah, eBay might be a good thing. Some people might immediately put it back in the hole and cover it back up with dirt.
You're a coward, yeah.
But, well, wouldn't you be afraid? If you did something with it, you're going to be dead.
Just anything with it?
It just says this vase brings death.
I guess.
Maybe. I don't know where this was, but I know when. 1988.
1988. I think let's go with Bassano.
Well, this person found the vase and they sold it to an auction house because it was old.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they knew how old it was or who determined it was a 15th century vase, but you know what that guy did?
What?
He threw the note away and just sold the vase as is.
That was irresponsible.
So the auction house and I guess the people who bought it didn't know. Mm. It was first bought by a pharmacist who then, what happened?
He died
3 months later.
Probably of something pharmacy related.
And then a surgeon bought the vase.
He had a hand cramp from filling pills. A surgeon, his scalpel, hit his own wrist, and he hit a nerve and hit an artery, and he bled to death. He bled into the person he was doing surgery on, ironically.
2 months later, he died. He was only 37 years old. Then the vase went to an archaeologist who bought it and died 2 months later.
He was buried in his own dig.
The next owner...
Was he diggering around? Getting
the next owner doesn't even get an occupation.
Spend some dude die by something.
They died within definite. A month.
Okay. You got time at least.
I know. And then, oh, I guess this was somewhere in Italy because...
the person making the story just got, you know what? Throw some more. Other people died at other times.
Well, at this point, I mean, how many people was that?
That's a lot.
A lot.
That's a deadly vase.
So the police confiscated the vase.
Of course they would.
And put it in a lead box and buried it in an unknown location.
Was it Missouri? Was it gold lined?
So somewhere in Italy.
Yeah, when I asked you where it was, you said he had no idea.
I know. And then I said, oh, here it was. It was somewhere in Italy.
Oh, okay.
You weren't listening.
No, I wasn't.
You were jabbering on about
it. I was trying to think of other people who died from it. With, I was going to give them names and occupations.
No, it's in a lead box.
Okay. Somewhere. Okay. So it's buried in Italy. Okay.
So apparently lead and gold are known to...
absolutely.
In
cases of fictional cursed objects, they are very, very effective.
Yes.
Yes. So far, I'm not sure I have one that I believe in other than possibly Robert the Doll. That sounds spooky. What's your number one?
Do you remember, because I do, in 1991 when hikers were traipsing around a glacier in the Ahrtal Alps?
Oh, is this going to be Ahrtsy?
On the border of Austria and Italy.
And the dried out 5,000-year-old dude? Okay.
They found... a mummified body, and who has been named Ahrtsy the Iceman.
He's cursed?
Do you remember this?
Yeah.
Yeah, me too. We were grown-ups in 1991.
I mean, it's in the news recently even.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
About the curse?
No, about Ahrtsy.
Well, it turned out
Ahrtsy... I think they found like he was killed. He was murdered.
Yeah.
He was probably by enemies actually... were, you know, yeah. Killed him, stabbed him or something like that.
I thought they knew
or
that.
Or strangled him or something like that.
Yeah. Well...
But, I mean, verified and clarified
okay.
it.
Okay. He turned out to be a middle-aged man mm-hmm. who was murdered by an arrow over 5,000
right.
years
that's
ago.
Right.
I think that came out fairly soon because I remember
yeah,
that from
I think
back
it
in the
did.
Day. And people, like we said, started calling him Ahrtsy the Iceman, and it was a big deal
mm-hmm.
in prehistoric research because... he was old.
It was in National Geographic before they sold to the devil.
Yeah. Well, 14 years later, so 14 years after 1991, if you want to do the math.
I don't.
An Australian molecular archaeologist by the name of Thomas Loy, he was 63 years
old. He said Australian, I think. He was probably Austrian.
No, Australian.
Let's roll the tape. He was Australian?
Yeah.
Okay. It's just, it's awkward for an Australian to work on a find in Austria, as you can
well,
see.
Well, no, it's not because he's an archaeologist and, you know, you go to where the big find is.
It's still, I think Australians should never go to Austria and Austrians should never go to Australia okay. just to avoid confusion.
Well, Thomas Loy died of natural causes.
Working
at the
on
age of 1963.
At the age of 1963. Good Lord, he was old. He was almost 2,000 years old.
Did I say 1963?
Carrie, I've heard, that's fine. It's a slight exaggeration.
Well, I keep trying to say it, and you keep just interrupting
how
me.
How old was he?
63.
Okay, 63. Okay.
Anyway, he had studied Ahrtsy closely, mm-hmm. and in fact, he was the one who found traces of blood from other people
oh.
on Ahrtsy, and so he's the one that claimed it was probably because he died during a skirmish, right?
Yeah.
Because he
so
had
an arrow,
blood
but
on
so
him.
He must have lived that. Maybe that's what he must have lived through the arrow and then hand to hand combat. Okay. Interesting.
So
he died when he was studying Ahrtsy.
Yes.
Okay. 63 years old.
So people thought, well, no, he didn't die when he was studying him because remember, he died 14 years later.
Okay.
But, you know, some people
makes a curse.
Connect dots.
Okay.
Well, like that.
Those really aren't even dots at that point.
So some people thought, yeah, that's not very remarkable.
Did they?
People die.
Yeah, I hope everyone would think that, but I feel like there's going to be more.
But some people thought, no, this is evidence that Ahrtsy had a curse upon its body. Because Thomas Loy wasn't the first person associated with Ahrtsy the Iceman to have such an end to their life.
An end to life.
It began the year after Ahrtsy was discovered. So 1992.
Okay.
A 64-year-old forensic pathologist named Rainer Henn.
Also Australian?
I didn't say where he was from.
Sorry.
He died in a car accident. Hen had moved Otzi's remains into a body bag, and he was actually on his way to give a lecture on Otzi the Iceman when he died. Not long after that death, mountain climber Kurt Fritz died in an avalanche. He is the one who had arranged the helicopter trip to go get Otzi from the mountain when he was first discovered. And Rainer Holtz, another Rainer, lots Jimmy of Rainers there. Nuts. He had taken, I guess, film footage of when they went to get Otzi from the mountain. He died at the age of 47 from a brain tumor.
Oh, no.
Clearly
Otzi's caused causing by brain Otzi tumors. The Iceman. Yeah.
And then there were three more deaths in quick succession between 2004 and 2005. Helmut Simon, one of the hikers who discovered Otzi, died after falling 300 feet down a mountain. Then another archaeologist, Conrad with a K, Spindler, one of Otzi's researchers, died of complications from multiple sclerosis. And then in October 2005 is when Thomas Loy died. He was the final victim of the Otzi
curse.
That
we know of.
Yeah.
Yeah. So in 14 years, several people who had seen or had any association whatsoever with
not
Otzi.
Not just seen. No, they had direct contact with them. And yeah, you might say there's lots of other people.
There's dozens, possibly hundreds of other people.
Otzi, and they're fine. Who's to say? Who's to know?
Naysayers.
But if you're brave.
Yeah.
And you want to see Otzi in person.
I do.
And you're not afraid of this curse.
I'm a little afraid of the curse.
But... He's in Italy's South Tyrol Museum
of
Archaeology.
Huh? Oh. You know, there was some... it was right on the border, I believe, of Italy and Austria. So there's some...
Because I said that. He was on the border.
Okay. Well, it sounds a lot like, of course, one that you left out from your top seven, which of course is King Tut's tomb or King Tut's sarcophagus blah, blah, blah. And it's the same kind of thing where you do have some people who are associated with, one of whom was in England and never, Lord Carnarvon, of course, died in England. And of course, Howard Carter, who was the main person to discover and the first person to touch King Tut's tomb, lived to a ripe old age. But it's the idea that you just start associating folks with something and you just, you know, you find mysterious deaths or deaths at a relatively young age, whatever. Okay.
Everybody knows about King Tut's tomb.
Yeah. So you left that off.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not everybody knows about Otzi.
So we had James Dean's car, Robert the Doll, Dybbuk box, Crying Baby paintings, Thomas Busby's chair, the Bassano vase, and of course, Otzi the Iceman. I am going to choose Robert the Doll as my favorite
best
and
one.
The only one I believe is actually for sure true.
Yeah.
And I want to go to Florida. Wait, is he in Florida?
Google it and look at his picture.
Is he scary?
He's in Florida.
Is he spooky?
It could be construed as a little bit creepy.
Okay.
You know, old toys, especially
old
toys,
dolls. Yeah, old dolls are very creepy.
Could be
That's
super
true.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are some ones that you left out? Annabelle, King Tut's tomb, or King Tut's sarcophagus,
Yeah, there's
I guess.
Another one, some Polish king tomb, same, very along the same lines as King Tut. I left off the one of a cursed chest of drawers.
Oh, okay. People die?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's called like the conjured chest.
Sounds intriguing. Yeah. Well, okay, Carrie, thank you for that spooky story of cursed objects throughout history caused untold death and mayhem.
You want to end this? Let's do another random curse.
Yeah. Okay. Random curse from what's it called?
Random curse generator from perchance.org/you-are-now-cursed.
Okay. Go.
You have been cursed by a misguided magic monster to instantly shrink by 3 feet when you least expect it.
That would suck.
Oh, no. Or you've been cursed by a wrathful warlock to have really bad gas when you see your reflection.
Yeah, these are people who live in basements. Well, thank you, Carrie, for that story. That was fascinating. Thank you.
I don't believe in curses.
I do. All of them, except for 6 of these 7. Otherwise, I believe in curses. I believe in all other curses. Well, thank you, Carrie.
You're welcome.
Until next time.
Bye. I was waiting for you to say until next time what?
I don't know.
Okay. Okay, bye.